This episode of CodeCast is brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. For more information, visit our website. It's agoracode.community. Like us on Facebook, Agora Code Community, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at CodeAgora. This episode is also brought to you by Renegade Media, which is your leading Zambian agency for everything digital marketing. Welcome to the third episode of CodeCast. I'm your host. My name is Kuma, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is
Elias Perry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We have a guest. I'll let him introduce himself.
Yeah. My name is Mbuyu. I'm a developer at Bongo Hack.
All right. Cool. That's the shortest intro we've had.
Yeah, so you know, right? Like I was actually like just waiting for like.
Oh, their whole intro.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Twitter, the Instagram.
Yeah.
No. It's usually the trend where people come here and stuff.
Shout out.
You know what I mean? So yeah, on today's episode, guys, we're talking about cloud, the cloud generally, the infrastructure that kind of builds the cloud, and what developers can do with this awesome technology. You know. So I guess without further ado, Wezi and Cynthia send their apologies. They're not able to make it today.
Yeah.
But they will join us for the next episode.
Yeah. So
okay, guys, we're talking about the cloud. The usual. Let's go around the table and basically just talk about what we feel like the cloud is.
Okay.
I think we'll start with Mbuyu.
Being
the guest.
Yeah.
And we can move from there. It's unscripted, guys. This is an unscripted podcast, and
you get all the awesomeness.
Yeah.
My basic understanding of cloud services and computing itself is just an infrastructure that supports developers in that it gives you resources such as computing resources. So instead of you having to buy your own server and put it in a room somewhere, you can just simply fridge.
Are you afraid you're getting too technical?
Yeah.
Can I ask you how to help him out?
Okay, I'll try and improve on that. If I get too technical, then I'll throw it your way. cloud computing is like the, how can I put it, the way in which you don't have to have, like Mbuyu was alluding to, a server in a room that is doing all your computing, running all your server end software, and it's basically running on, how can I put it, a remote server that is offered up to developers as a service,
yes,
so to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if someone can describe the cloud without using the word server.
Well,
I know, right?
It's difficult. Server is basically just a computer that is sitting somewhere that is doing everything. So if you have a laptop, technically you could use that laptop as a server.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we have these companies that have built, you know, computers specifically to run as servers.
Mm-hmm.
And that are like, you know, doing the cloud computing for you.
All right,
yeah.
Cool. You know, I once read a very interesting perspective of what the cloud is, and this was like for the layman, and it was described as, okay, like it basically started from the point where you don't think about the cloud like a big, puffy, fluffy, white
thing
in the sky.
Yeah,
like it's nothing to do with that. It's basically as something as simple as your phone connecting with another device and an interconnection. That's similar to how the internet works, basically.
Yeah. I think due to the technicalities of everything, you sort of get lost in the jargon.
Yeah.
But it's basically just you using someone's computer to put your web files.
Your files.
Web application.
Yeah, and if anyone uses stuff like Google Drive or Apple, what's it called?
iCloud.
I have an iPhone.
let's not get into that.
Every episode, iPhone battle.
No, but yeah, like you said, like it's basically just the services that you're using. Kind of like, yeah, like the internet is basically just the collection of
devices
interconnected. It's like a network of networks, as they say.
Yeah. And this kind of spins into our one piece of tech news we're going to do for this particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's GitHub getting acquired by Microsoft, which I personally didn't see coming.
Neither did I.
I don't know if anyone saw that coming.
No. I like the news started to come out like I think a day or two.
Yeah,
I think at that
days,
point
yeah.
it was already like cemented. It
yeah, and we were just hearing rumors.
Yeah. Exactly.
And at first, I thought it was one of those things.
Hmm.
And I'm not the biggest fan of Microsoft when it comes to anything to do with open source. I, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you will realize that, and I hope we don't digress, that the last few years, Microsoft is the biggest contributor to open source, even more than Google.
Yeah, well,
that is quite. Sorry.
So I was just gonna say, I think the fear is not so much that it's Microsoft purchasing it, as it is one of the big companies. Because like right now, one of the conversations in Silicon Valley is. Everything belongs to one of the big five, and we've talked about the big five before, right? So like GitHub was like one of those like safe havens for developers, and now it's part of Microsoft, which is one of the big five, and now people are like, well, now what are we left with, right? And to GitLab's credit, like they use this as an opportunity. Like developers have been flocking there. They just announced a deal with Xcode with Apple. Like,
But guys, what do developers have to be scared of? I think the biggest problem here is maybe in the company culture changing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really affect how you store your code.
Exactly.
Are people afraid that Microsoft will suddenly start putting restrictions on your code? You have to start paying for...
GitHub needs to update. Would you like to update?
I think in terms of, like, people being afraid of Microsoft, it's more of, like, history. Like, people...
Yeah.
You remember... I think his name was Steve something.
Yes,
he once said, "Open source is a plague. It's a disease, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So it's that fear that people have carried on, and the moment they announced that, everyone was just like, "Okay, are they?"
You guys need to dig deeper into the history, like not even just history, like just the recent change. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
After Steve Ballmer, when he was handing over to who's the current CEO now of Microsoft again?
At the risk of sounding racist, it's a similar, like, you know,
I forget, and I guess we'll be reminded later.
Yeah.
When he was handing over, his words, he said, I'm from a different generation. We are moving into an era where the cloud is taking its place in the industry. I'm not the person to drive Microsoft into that era. So that's why he was handing over.
Yeah.
And basically, since Steve Ballmer left, have you noticed that Microsoft it's taking a different direction?
Yeah.
There's been
a
shift.
Yeah.
Even in terms of their platforms and how they are opening up a lot more.
The relationship with Linux.
Yeah.
Even relationship with developers is changing.
Exactly.
So, like, I don't really feel like it's something that people should really be afraid of.
Yeah.
And I guess we could kind of get into... what some of the obvious uses of the cloud infrastructure are. If Microsoft sees it as a way into an environment where they can compete with everybody else, what is it that we use the cloud for that is such a big deal that changes the whole ecosystem of a company?
And I think it's worth pointing out that Azure is the biggest cloud platform, if I'm not mistaken.
Do you know that GitLab
not
is
AWS.
Actually using
no.
Azure?
I think AWS actually also runs on Azure.
Really?
I don't. Let me check. Don't quote me on that. At the risk of but like, Azure is a lot bigger than people give it credit for.
I know we touched on this in the previous episode. We're talking about how the Internet of Things and net neutrality and. Vendor lock-ins and that sort of stuff, and we touched on the Internet of Things, how these devices are connected to each other, how you can communicate with your smart home, how you can communicate with your device, how you can have everything from one place, and this is kind of the basis for the cloud. Yeah, like how can we make people understand that the cloud is in their hands? I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay, like it's not some demon somewhere.
Yeah, like it's not a demon.
Yeah.
Like people use it on a daily basis. Like it's in the simplest of uses.
Yeah,
even just your pictures, when you lose your phone and you get a new phone, just enter your email address, and mm-hmm. suddenly your phone is like there, like you never lost your data. Like,
yeah.
Where do you think the data goes and stuff? Yeah.
Like, I think this is something that as we're growing into the culture of, you know, shifting more and more towards the cloud, like people are going to start to realize that even when they don't realize they're using the cloud,
they are using
the cloud. Like, it's one of those things. We look at how, like, on one of our previous episodes, we were looking at how you get locked into your ecosystems and
mm-hmm.
whatnot, and it's easier to transfer things because, like, you have your Google Drives and you have your whatnot, right? These are things that people don't realize are just, like, cloud services being used to their benefit, at least in some cases.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have, like, maybe we should have, like a different name, like a different way of calling the cloud.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the question is, you know, they called it the cloud for a reason.
It was easy.
Yeah.
But now it's not.
Yeah, it's got that stigma to it. Like,
yeah.
So it's changing the name really going to change the stigma?
Nah,
but
yeah.
I guess not. Just a question. Like, what makes it different from, you know, back in the day when you have a website and it's somewhere? You know, like...
Not really different. Well, okay, my perspective, and if we disagree with me. My perspective is it's not all that different. I think what's changed is just the resources and the power, like you defined.
Yeah.
Like, you can do so much more. Before, it was just a website and it could just be static. Now you could have, like, your databases, your underlying infrastructure on the cloud. Now we talk about something, and I think only the technical people may understand this term, but we're talking about infrastructure as a service, software as a service, platform as a service. So think about it this way. Before, you had your server in your server room. Now your server is on the internet, which
mm-hmm.
and you can scale easily. Like, you can literally just go and dial up a knob. Like, I had 2 gigs, I want 6.
Mm-hmm.
So I can cater for my drastic increase in users.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to help you save money as well.
Yeah,
so you scale at your pace.
Yeah. Getting in, like, I think we're getting into pros of cloud
computing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's one question someone asked me, and at that point I was like, I'll leave it for the podcast.
But, like, yeah, like, I feel like that is, like, the biggest pro, right?
Yeah.
It's, first of all, it's a lot cheaper. It's easier to
scale.
Well, think about the cost of, like, getting your own server.
Okay, let's shoot numbers. Let's shoot numbers. I had the opportunity of seeing an invoice for a server, a modern server,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Dell unit,
mm-hmm.
It's about 14 terabytes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be used for redundancy purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So two servers, same specs.
Mm-hmm.
One is the primary link, then the other one is the backup.
Mm-hmm.
So they're constantly syncing and saving data, and one unit of this costs about 500,000 kwacha.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's about one unit. And this is just for that particular spec.
Okay.
You know, it could
yeah.
be less, it could be more. So if I get that, I'm set for how many years? Like,
but if you're talking about scale.
14 terabytes, yeah.
Well, it's not just, that's the thing. Like, if you've got a server, it's
mm-hmm.
not just about the space you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about how it deals with the traffic coming in and the traffic going out. You have to think about things when you have really powerful machines that can deal with that kind of traffic, you have to think of things like server rooms. Like, that kind of thing.
Cooling.
Like, server rooms are there. Yeah.
Cooling.
Server rooms are there for a reason. Like, these machines run really hot, so you need to have, you know, that kind of environment that's going to cool it down. You need to have things like UPSs that, you know, take care of, like, power failures. And considering we're living in Zambia, that is a serious consideration to
yeah.
take. So the costs don't just come with just getting the server. Yeah. It comes with getting the server, having the environment for the server to run well, dealing with both incoming and outgoing traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the infrastructure of the internet in the country that we have to deal with, right?
But that doesn't change. I'm sorry, I'm kind of being an antagonist here because
yeah.
I know everything you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate for infrastructure. But But I just want to get you thinking about the art, because we're talking pros and cons of hosting our services in the cloud, using the cloud, everything. It's easy on our mobile devices because, you know, Wi-Fi, data, you know, you do it as and when you want to do it. But for a running business that needs to be online, we're talking about uptime. Whether it's your servers in your server room or using an internet connection with a server on the internet, we still have an issue of uptime. Like you said, our internet landscape here, it doesn't change.
Yeah, it doesn't change, but I'm looking at it from the perspective of, maybe let me give like a use case. Say, I feel like that's the way to express. So you say we have a company, right? And it's dependent on like, you know, uptime, like you said, like it's always online and we have all this traffic, right? So say we start out small, say we start out with say the Lusaka population as the people that are accessing it, okay? Once you start to scale up, that means you have to buy more servers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, more servers means you have to change the infrastructure of your server room. It also means you have to, like, there are all these, like, costs.
Yeah, more personnel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all these things have to be managed. And looking at the pros of cloud computing, like Mbuyu said, you have a dial and you're like, okay, 6 GB isn't doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm up it to 10, okay? And yeah, you're going to pay more, but it's drastically less than you pay to buy a new server and to upgrade your server room.
And also just the startup cost in terms of like...
starting a business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just getting
service. Because imagine if I'm a small business and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And say I am serving a minimum of 5,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I can just simply sort of like calculate based on the traffic that I might receive for that particular duration.
Mm-hmm.
And I can select a certain sort of configuration that fits my user case,
mm-hmm.
where I don't have to spend so many resources. Cloud computing really makes it easier for any person to just simply click one button,
mm-hmm.
enter their credit card details, and you're already running.
Credit card details.
Yeah.
So I guess now we're getting into security conversations. And for me, I was more, card information, that's a different level of security. That's on the user end.
Yeah.
But what about security on the infrastructure end?
Okay.
Like, you're keeping your data in the cloud.
Yeah.
If it's in your server room, you have a lot more control. You can set firewalls. Like, you control what level of security you have for that room.
Yeah.
Or what about in the cloud? What guarantee do we have?
So that's like, again, like the big con, right? you're surrendering like all
your company data
to a third party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
another Facebook. Yeah.
Exactly. So when
I think a disclaimer, we have to mention that Mbuyu is one of the co-leads of the developer circles.
Yeah. Disclaimer.
Disclaimer. So, but
yeah.
On this show, his opinions are his own and not from the developer
company.
Circle.
Yeah.
Yes.
But like, yeah. So like security, right? You surrender all your company information to a third party. What happens if that third party is compromised? You basically have no control, and it's not just like giving up control in terms of security. What
is access? Like, remember when AWS was down last? I think it was last year or 2 years ago. How come the internet was off? Like most of the services, like pin interest, you couldn't access.
Yeah, them. Dude. Like there were issues on so many other companies because of them running on AWS.
So also revenue.
Yeah.
Although one could argue it's the same thing if you lose power and your genset is not working.
Yeah, but then you see that's where the control comes in, right?
Mm.
Like, you have control.
Or
at least you have more control.
Backup,
yeah. You have more control over what is happening when the server is your own. But like when it's a cloud service. Like, not really related to like cloud services, but like in 2012 or 2011? PSN was down for like a month.
Yeah.
Like a PlayStation Network.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not ready now.
But yeah, like just to give you context of how like the company they were running their servers with was hit by multiple DDoS
attacks.
Yeah, and they were down for a month.
Wow.
Now, PlayStation is no like minnow. Okay, this is a huge company, and their primary service for their PlayStation brand was down for a month. That means you couldn't play games online. That means you couldn't purchase games online. That means, like, it was a big deal, and they lost a ton of revenue. So that just shows how when you don't have that control and when things are out of your hands, that means you have one of two options: wait for the third party to fix it, or go through the process of migrating to another cloud service. And even then, you still have the same challenges.
And I think to bring it closer to home, these are the same challenges you have even with just your ordinary website. I mean, your hosting service will promise you 99%. And I think I've noticed this. Most of them say 99% uptime.
Exactly.
But we still experience a lot of lapses.
The 1%.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone can promise 100%.
No, you can't. But then my thing is basically that sometimes it's a lot more than just 1%.
Yeah.
But you just don't see it. And it's the same risk. If your website is down, how do people get information about you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same scale, obviously, like PSN, but
it affects people still.
Yeah. But I think one of the biggest pros from my perspective is just how cloud platforms, especially for developers, has reduced the development time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll get into this later when we talk about containers and how they're kind of doing rounds on the internet and helping people develop faster.
Yeah.
Let's talk streamlining the process of development. We do requirements engineering, we do design, and then we go into development, we go into testing, we go into maintenance, we go into all that stuff. Like, the cloud has made it seamless. You host your code with GitHub or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That can be linked to another platform which handles your user requirements.
Exactly.
And that way, from the comfort of your desk, you've got a bird's eye view of everything.
The whole shebang.
I think that's cool.
That is, as developers, that is one of the like big pros when it comes to like
cloud services and working remotely and collaboration.
That's
revolutionary for me. That's hands down. I'll use the cloud.
Yeah,
give me that.
Like, I remember like in second year at university, like trying to collaborate like manually, like,
guys,
hey, this is...
I'll tell you a story about my worst collaboration ever. You guys, they're doing a project, a Java project, without any collaboration.
Dude,
that's crazy.
I'll tell you guys after, for the listeners. I don't know if you guys will have a collaboration hearing this story, but the guys in the studio will.
So
I guess, What really makes up the cloud? I mean, what kind of infrastructure are we talking about here? And I think maybe this section is a lot more for the technical minds, maybe not the layman, but what's the underlying infrastructure, the technology? What are we talking about?
Okay. In terms of like the underlying infrastructure, well, I'll put it in layman's form. It's, you basically have a computer that is simulating other computers.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
would you say it's like a virtual machine on not only that, not on my computer? It's like somewhere else.
Mm.
Yes, it's a computer somewhere else, a large computer somewhere else. Back in the day, they used to call them mainframes.
Yeah. I was so confusing in my early days. Huh? I was like, wait, is a mainframe different from a server?
But it was just that like naming convention.
And I bet you it's Apple's fault.
Yeah. What did
okay.
Apple do?
I know you're trying to bait me, but I
know. So, the infrastructure is just a computer which has been configured, specially manufactured to handle so many users. But we've moved sort of from that one computer only giving resources to a particular set of people to like one computer sort of creating virtual computers, which then sort of multiplies
how much power it has
and how many people it can service. So I don't want to dive into virtual machines because that's like another
woodiness.
Yeah. But yeah, that's how most of these cloud computing services are sort of established.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. So I think my first hack at the cloud, basically from a developer's perspective, was obviously I think we played around with Firebase. It's a Google technology for everybody that doesn't know what it is. And I think the moment you decided to start using a platform like GitHub, you basically start using cloud services, version control, and that sort of thing. So yeah, and I think version control was my first step at using cloud services.
Mine too. Yeah, like it was kind of that like aha moment, you know, where you've been doing stuff one way for so long, and then you're introduced to this technology, and it just makes
so much of
what you're doing.
And you ask yourself, like,
why have I been doing it?
Exactly.
I had the same reaction the first time that I set up a repository there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always used to think it was that place where you find like libraries and, you know, like tutorials.
Mm.
And until I realized it really helps in ensuring that I do not lose my work.
Yeah,
and also makes it easy for other people to collaborate and with you. But so it was really, really a powerful interaction with like such a service, which has really made everyone's lives better.
Yeah.
Until they,
like for me, like
themselves to Microsoft.
This guy doesn't like it.
I see this now. Look. Yeah, but like yeah, but like yeah, like I think this is true for like most of us. Like from a developer perspective, like our first interaction with like using the cloud to kind of streamline our work was using repositories. Funny story, my first repo wasn't GitHub, it was actually Bitbucket. That's the first one I worked with. And then I shifted to GitHub because it's GitHub.
That's too useful actually, even up to today.
Yeah, well I haven't used Bitbucket in years, honestly. Like since I moved to GitHub, I've been using GitHub like almost exclusively. I've used GitLab one or two times, but like most of like the projects I work on, like GitHub is like my main repo. Yeah. There have been a few projects that I've worked on with other people where they're the ones taking lead and they have a repo. Like for example, Broma was working with Bitbucket, so I was working with Bitbucket with them. But like, it's one of those things where just the underlying technology and infrastructure of it altogether just changed how you thought
about it.
Like things as simple, things that we overlook, things as simple as rolling back, to a previous version. Like that saved me at a certain point in more ways than you can imagine, because when you work on something for so long and then you realize, damn, I broke so many things.
Yeah. I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
When was this revolution? When did your perspective change?
I'd say, do you want the exact time? Or?
Just a year.
2011 or 12?
No.
What about you?
First time diving into cloud.
Let's say version control. Let's talk
version control.
Yeah.
Embarrassingly, it was 2015.
That's not embarrassing, believe me, it's not. let me tell you guys something.
Yeah,
while we were discovering, and this is what pains me about how ridiculously behind we are, yet this technology is at our fingertips already.
Yeah.
2015, 2011, 2012. I can tell you that around 2013, a company called Docker was starting. And this was revolution, whatever. This is like changing.
It's now shifting the pendulum.
Sorry, guys. Some words are too big. This is like...
help you. Revolutionizing.
Thank you. What he said. What he said.
It's me and military.
What he said was changing what you were having an epiphany about.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we host software, the way we have, the way our applications work, the way we deploy, the way we ship to our different users, the way we host, was actually changing at that point. And we went from like a 0 to 100, like almost immediately. Like, think about it this way. We talk about virtual machines, yeah? Which is just basically abstracting an environment on your PC and you can do whatever you want without hurting your primary system or whatever. So now, at this point, we now have what we call containers coming into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, containers go a step further by isolating different user spaces in the same environment.
Yeah.
So like you can ship one application on one user space, another one on another user space, but on the same machine. And you can basically deploy anywhere, any kind of environment. Don't need to worry about that.
Yeah.
Like even if someone came and said, I want to use it, they don't need to set up an environment on their PC. It's already there.
Yeah.
Like that was happening starting 2015.
And we were just getting into version control then.
I think this is where the aspect of like internet penetration comes in. I feel like that needed to be addressed. Because like we've reached a point where like internet penetration is so good. It's good, not great, good. So you can explore these things. So I think it would be fair to also have that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember, like, the first time I tried out version control was back in university at CBU.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a lab. And that lab, the good part is that we knew someone who was working in that lab. And he could allow us to use the actual Ethernet cables, which had really good internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that access to quality
internet
allows you to explore.
Yeah. Okay, so I see two things here, and I guess this is digressing a little bit, but I think it might be necessary to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, as developers, and I think we'll get into this later when we talk about what services are available, like what kind of help is there for developers to get into the cloud space and experience the goodness that is there. And like Mui was talking about, there's a challenge of internet penetration.
Yeah.
And I think... we'll probably tweet about the latest stats from the sector with regards to how much internet penetration we have at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about like mobile devices, which are kind of becoming the norm. All right, so I think we'll cut out the silence here.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about devices and how people now are much more aware of smartphones than they used to be, but we're having a very slow uptake when it comes to everything else, like computers and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess step by step process. What is our role? First of all, as individuals and as organizations, and like what is our role in helping other people understand that these things are like right there?
Okay, that's very good.
Apart from our ISPs and MSPs not helping us out, I mean, the 90%, is it 70% data rate? You know, like data price is good. Like, yeah, that was really good, but I feel like they can do so
much
more.
So much more, dude.
Yeah,
so much more. It's one of those things. Like he's talking about like getting it to GitHub because of internet penetration. I was lucky enough to be partnered with someone, shout out Shamai. Who actually got into this technology himself and then, you know, basically educated me on how we can use this technology to kind of move forward. So I think at a granular level, like individually, I think that it helps, like being able to like share what you know, like sharing your knowledge. And I think this is something that we've talked about. I think I've talked to you about it, and I've talked to you about it. How, you know, talking about your experiences as a developer, no matter how granular, no matter how insignificant it may seem, might push someone into a direction that is going to make them a better developer and is going to therefore make the software in the country better. Like we talk about things like GitHub now, like they're the norm, but so many people
don't know.
So many people still don't use GitHub.
Yeah.
Don't know about version control, and it's kind of sad because it's not that they don't know about it because they just don't care. It's that thing. Like even when you're talking about internet, like internet not being as available as it could be. People that have internet aren't always looking towards that stuff. Someone is looking to solve the immediate problem that they have, whether it's solving an algorithm or, you know, finding out how to make their code better, refactoring codes, things like that. And they're not thinking about how to, you know, do things like work in teams and stuff like that, because a lot of developers are still working on their own.
Yeah.
So like having that, you know, kind of, hey dude, have you heard about this moment? Or, you know, you could use this to do this, you know.
Yeah. It could take us
exactly
a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, we break off for a brief ad. This episode of CodeCast is brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. For more information, visit our website. It's agoracode.community. Like us on Facebook, Agora Code Community, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at CodeAgora. This episode is also brought to you by Renegade Media, which is your leading Zambian agency for everything digital marketing. Okay, guys, welcome back to episode 3 of CodeCast. I'm joined by Mbuyu.
Mbuyu, who's a developer at Pongwire.
Okay. And my co-host, as usual, Elias.
You should stop doing that.
No, why?
You seem,
can I do the like episode 3 like thing from
what's
the thing I want to do?
Oh. Do it.
Episode 3.
Okay.
It sounded a lot cooler in my head, guys.
Okay.
yeah, it's one of those.
Anyway, so today we're discussing the cloud, cloud infrastructure, and what the cloud has in store for developers. And Elias mentioned something really cool before the break, and we were talking about how it could go a long way if we shared our stories with other developers to kind of help them cross the line.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe this is a good opportunity to talk about some of the stuff that's available on all the different cloud services that allow developers to get in, maybe for free or maybe with like different benefits,
mm-hmm.
so that they can appreciate the services and stuff like that. And I know a number. I know GitHub has a student pack, which
mm-hmm.
I have used before,
mm-hmm.
and it's very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
I know Azure has one as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know AWS has
yeah.
one as well.
They have AWS Educate.
Educate.
Yeah.
And there's another company, JetBrains.
Yeah, JetBrains is for their IDE.
Yeah, well, the PHP Storm.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ruby Mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the Python one is called, but for 2 years, I think it's 2 years.
Mm-hmm. It's also a student. It's also a student.
So it's
pack,
a student
yeah.
pack. Yeah, for 2 years you can use any of their IDEs for free, like any of their platforms for free,
mm-hmm.
and it's amazing. I used it for 2 years. It only expired this year.
I think Bitnami.
Mm-hmm.
Bitnami.
Yeah.
Bitnami. Bitnami.
Bitnami.
Okay. That's a WordPress thing, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it a WordPress thing?
There's also DigitalOcean.
DigitalOcean as
yeah.
well, yeah. So maybe we could like explore some of them and like give developers a highlight on what exactly is available, what kind of services they can benefit from. Maybe we could start with AWS, which I know Bongo Hype has kind of touched on, so that's something that you may know a lot about.
Yeah. So with AWS, which is a web hosting service by Amazon,
mm-hmm.
if you bought anything on Amazon, you're part of the system.
I'm a serial shopper, man. Like, I have stuff in my cart right now, waiting for money to hit my account.
Aren't we all?
So, with Amazon, you can basically spin your own servers just to test out clouds, yeah, cloud infrastructure. It's really good. We've been at work, we've been playing around with their Lite server system. So it makes the whole process of like spinning servers really simple. You don't need to be AWS certified
to like get into it.
That, yeah, you can just spin your own server within like a minute, everything is
all set up.
Yeah, all set up.
Look, I'm not even gonna lie to anybody. Like, I've been through those Amazon services, man, and it's not the easiest. Like, you're saying simple, but it's not the simplest to navigate.
Trust
even
man.
Just setting, even just wading your way through their website, looking at all the different packages and servers available. Like, guys, that's a lot of jargon. Like,
no,
are there tutorials
trust
that allow you to learn?
No, they're not. There are tutorials. And there are courses, like actual courses, and you get certified. You can even put it on your sitting room, you know.
Oh, really? Like
Udacity,
Coursera.
Yeah, Udacity,
Are those free? Because I know, Udemy has a bunch of free courses, but I don't know if those are certified. Those are kind of just from what I've seen. A lot of those are actually just explainer courses. They don't certify you, but I'm not sure. Free certification?
Amazon does certification. At one, their developer conference, there's actually people who take exams whilst the conference is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to be AWS certified. But they have Lightsail, which really simplifies the whole process of spinning a server. If you have used DigitalOcean before?
I haven't, but wait, I need to differentiate this. And I know I'm supposed to be an experienced developer and I should know all the stuff. But guys, I don't know everything. Heroku.
Heroku.
Is Heroku DigitalOcean? Or the two separate entities?
I'm not sure.
I think they're different,
but Heroku might use DigitalOcean. Because Docker, GitLab, Slack, those use DigitalOcean. That much I know. I'm not sure about
Heroku.
Yeah. But it's possible. I mean,
yeah.
I need to do my research on that.
So, in terms of like what the Amazon Education Pack involves, it's sort of like gives you all the necessary training that you need in order to start your cloud. What they say, cloud career.
Mm-hmm.
So you have personalized paths, you have knowledge packs, and you know all this stuff. So if you have never sort of like thought of being a cloud engineer, I think you should leverage.
Guys, let me tell you something. A cloud engineer is just the millennial version of a systems administrator.
I had to throw in the word there.
Come on, man.
Why are you doing this?
It's like a cloud engineer is not going to private school.
Oh, wow. Like that. That is tweet-worthy right there.
No shit.
Yeah. People throwing words like DevOps and all that stuff.
And I love DevOps.
Yeah.
I love DevOps. And I love the idea of improving processes and making them seamless. I very much dislike the way in which you move from platform to platform, doing the same thing, continuing the same process, and then having to generate a report on the entire process after that. Like, I feel like we're at a place where the cloud is doing a lot more, it's so much that it's now up to us as developers kind of just fill in the gaps. And DevOps is something you should look into, actually.
Honestly, there's so much you need to look into.
Maybe Elias could point out on like what GitHub is doing for people like who do not know how.
I was actually going to go into Google.
I can do GitHub because I'm still a Bennett.
It's not the word.
It's the fact that I'm not a student anymore.
I'm
not afraid to say because I'm actually okay with paying for the service. Like it's like $7 a month, and you still get unlimited private repos. And that sort of thing. So I could still pay for the service. I really don't mind. I mean, I pay for a bunch of stuff. I pay for 100 gigabytes of Google Cloud storage, and it's only like $1.99 on a monthly basis.
Dude, I pay for Netflix and never watch it. Like,
you guys are rich.
The stuff is affordable now.
For
you and me that have the privilege of like having full time job, I feel like $7 a month is
not that much.
It's in comparison to how much benefit
medium.
You're yeah. And you see the thing is
medium.
Oh wow. When I signed up for GitHub, yeah, I was in uni and I still have my student account.
Mm.
And then I shout out to CITE because CITE's owner told me about the education pack.
Mm.
I looked into it and I got a bunch of like really good features and platforms to test all my stuff just by virtue of me being a student and stuff. So for free, for 2 years, you have unlimited private repos, pretty much access to most of the premium stuff that
mm-hmm.
GitHub has, and all this for free.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's cool. That's really awesome. Like I feel like a lot of the student packages are getting like really, because I feel like these companies realize. I mean, maybe like obviously there's like business, there's a business side to it that they're leveraging. But I feel like to some extent they realize that the student is important. And if you get a student in at the point when they're learning these technologies. Then, like,
when they're capable
yeah,
of actually
they,
affording
yeah,
it,
yeah,
it's
they,
very easy
yeah.
because they understand. It's
right.
It's pretty much the same business model as freemium.
Yeah, free trials
yeah.
and that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, free trials. You enjoy
yeah.
the product and you basically get
yeah.
Like, I really don't care what version control system you use. I just prefer that people actually use some level of version control.
Yeah. It sort of avoids the scenario that I, before jumping into version control,
mm-hmm.
imagine. You know, you're working on this final year project and then you have like final version one,
yeah,
final version two,
final version.
The name
then you forget. Then
yeah.
you forget. You that day you forgot to save in your usual saving pattern, you save something else and then just be like, yo, which one is it?
it's crazy, it's crazy. So yeah, like just a disclaimer, I'm an organizer for GDG Lusaka. Yeah, we got Google and Facebook in the same room.
Yeah.
No, but like, yeah. So Google actually has, like, I feel like all the cloud services, or at least the three, have student packages. But then Google also has a kind of a freemium type thing. So what they do is there's a 12-month like if you're a new Google Cloud user, when you sign up, they give you $300 of credit, which you can use for like Google services for 12 months. But then there's also like an always free tier where they kind of like, you know, they have some services that you can't access. And it's actually a pretty extensive list, but I don't know, we'll probably tweet about it just as we're sharing those resources. But like, yeah, like... Google has like certain tiers that like most I think even Amazon has this. Yeah, it has certain tiers, but like the one that really catches my eye is the one that lets you use like $300 of credit for 12 months.
Mm.
Initially, it was 60 days. That is actually pretty big because think about it like as a startup.
Yeah, because
I
was thinking about adopting some of. Google technology for some cloud services I was going into, and I looked at the number of transactions that you're allowed to, and
mm-hmm.
I think $300 is actually something pretty good for.
It's
very good,
especially if you're going to do a month of testing.
Yeah,
1 month testing.
It's a really cool way for a small startup to get to a point where, you know, they use the technology enough
and
that
they like it,
see if they like it, and you could even like honestly, you could get to a point where you're starting to. Gain revenue, and 12 months in, you're probably making enough money
to pay for the service.
Yeah.
So, not just startups, even just students across UNSA.
Yeah.
I mean, like one of the issues that I faced as a student was, okay, we are we're using a local server, that's a laptop, and you have an application that your supervisor has told you to deploy on your mobile phone because they don't trust virtual machines.
Yeah, they don't trust, what are they called? When you're running, the virtual, like I forget what it's
virtual
called.
Virtual Android emulators.
Emulators,
yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to
it's a whole thing. Because I remember, like, I was working on a project in school as well where, like, they basically made it a point that, okay, sure you can use an emulator if you have to, but you want to see it on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using an iPhone.
Yeah.
So
the struggle, man.
The struggle.
So like we've kind of talked about different technologies
mm-hmm.
from big companies outside our borders. Do we have any companies that are doing any kind of cloud hosting it may be available for developers or not, but as a country, like, are we heading that direction? How's the future like? Do you guys have any idea?
Yeah, first company that I'll mention is Zambia National Data Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so for those that do not know, this was a project by, I think, the government?
Yeah, it's the government, yeah.
Yeah, to sort of like have this this infrastructure where all data can be stored. So it's not just limited to government
mm-hmm.
Computing services. It's also like if you need to host your own
application.
Yeah.
So like even me, Jim and Jack can go host my application.
Yeah, I think they have got rates for
who's Jim?
Yeah.
And who's Jack?
Well, I know Jack. Sorry, I couldn't
just
help myself.
And it's very interesting because I feel like, you know how we talk about things being on the internet and
mm-hmm.
how servers have to be as close to you as possible?
Mm-hmm.
This is why we have CDNs, Cloud Delivery Networks,
mm-hmm.
so we can bring content closer to the user.
Yeah.
This is why we use machine learning to kind of figure out what kind of content would be popular
exactly.
in a particular region, which is what YouTube does, by the way.
Yeah, like actually, like Google, most of Google services are trying to use like their machine learning algorithms to basically say, okay, we know, okay, like at a really small scale, say, an artist is popular in Zambia. They use machine learning to
yeah. We're going to cut this part out. Homeboy was about to take Chris. We're not talking about CDNs. We're going into talking about how the... Okay, we've started again. So, talking about how CDNs are supposed to bring content closer to us, don't you think if more Zambians hosted more applications on a local data center, we kind of improve content delivery to the immediate user?
Yes, certainly. One of the frustrating things that I've had to encounter was, like, I'm not a gamer, so I tried playing Fortnite, and I was at work, I was alone, and I believe I had the best internet. I couldn't play it.
It's good you say you believe you have the best internet.
Yeah, so it's that, I think, like, yeah, in terms of gaming, that would drastically improve. How, like, the bane to a gamer or an online gamer is the ping, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest overhead to ping is the fact that you're communicating with a server in Europe or even as close as South Africa. Could you imagine if, like, they brought servers to Zambia?
Zimbabwe is closer.
Is closer, but, like the point I'm making is the closer the servers are,
the faster.
Not only, like, for example, like a lot of Zambian websites are actually hosting on external
.coms.
So
do you think like network administrator system administrators
mm-hmm.
or people that are responsible for such decisions actually like have that in mind when they're choosing which hosting service?
I feel like you're going somewhere with that. No.
But look, this is the issue. Like, as long as you've got a website, it's up and running,
mm-hmm.
you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, that's the general notion.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
People forget. Like, there's very content heavy from a digital perspective, from a media perspective,
mm-hmm.
Website that we have in the country right now, even our e-commerce sites, yeah?
Mm.
They're serving local content, like locals' products or whatever, but are hosting on .com, and this is ever-changing content. Like, there's only so much CDNs can do. Like,
yeah.
They can cache your resources, but if it's ever-changing, you know, there's still that lapse.
The overhead catches up with you.
And I feel like people don't take that into consideration too much. But I don't blame them sometimes, because even our hosting services, maybe, hosting services, I can offer .co.zn domains. I don't know if they're as good and efficient.
Yeah. Just another question that I just want to throw out.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about like cloud services and everything.
Yeah.
Do you think we have enough, like, in terms of human resource, people that are quite good at
cloud engineers?
Yeah, cloud
engineers. System administrators.
Cloud engineers. The ones that went to private.
The millennial system.
Look, guys, I feel like it's one and the same thing. There's gaps, obviously.
Yeah.
When we start talking about Docker and Kubernetes,
mm-hmm.
and obviously there's gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And people learn. I feel like you throw them in fire, they learn.
Yeah, that's true.
There's so many. I'm capable of running cloud infrastructure if I put my mind to it, because I have basic knowledge of what a server is supposed
mm-hmm.
to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need,
yeah.
really, in my opinion.
You learn as you go.
But in truth, yes, we could do trainings, and that's something we can think about. We could do training specifically for cloud engineering,
mm-hmm.
so that people learn faster.
Yeah.
But human resource, for me, is definitely there.
Yeah.
It's definitely there. And this goes back to my problem with the engineering space right now, generalization.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I said that right. right?
Yeah.
So, like, we have a lot of software engineers that are generalists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you develop everything and anything.
Yeah.
You are a network administrator, you
mm-hmm.
do everything and anything. But
mm-hmm.
even these industries have so many, like, spaces that you could take advantage,
mm-hmm.
take advantage of and be the leading provider. Like, let's talk, like, a cloud space, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's relatively new here,
mm-hmm.
and you could take advantage of, and you could use that as a business case to kind of drive your skills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like cybersecurity, which is still something that's booming.
Yeah, but like we still have a very open space of people that like could, and like to jump off what you were saying, like yeah, a lot of people are generalizing, and I feel like it's good to generalize, but to a point.
Yeah.
Like it's good to have a general understanding of how these things work. But at a certain point, I feel like you have to kind of taper off.
It's good to be able to adapt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's good to be able to adapt.
Yeah. But like at a certain point, once you find your footing, I think
you should own that space.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have a space where you're like, okay, this is me. Okay. Like if you hire me to do a job in this space,
I would do it.
It's over. Like this is what I do, as opposed to being like. And I know it's difficult because of how like the employment space in this country
yeah.
is. You know, you jump on whatever comes your way. But you know, being the person that is like, I'll apply for every job that whatever I fit in, yeah, you know, whatever I fit in, that's what I'm doing. You know.
So yes, we are going back to how many companies actually doing cloud services in the country. Do you think this is where the problem starts?
I think it's a big part of the problem, yes.
Like, I know there's another company, I think it's called NetOne.
Oh, yeah.
Their data center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think they host, I don't know if they host applications or they just store data. I'm not exactly sure. But I think that's another company I've heard of that does this sort of thing. Apart from them, I really haven't heard of anybody else. And NDC, obviously.
Yeah.
But...
actually, yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't know of any outside those two. Well, no, actually.
Okay, maybe. I also know only of the National Data Center and
NetOne. Yeah.
I think
they're probably somewhat forgetting, but like that
yeah,
just speaks to how
got a new.
Yeah,
I now always imagine that ISPs that have been around for 20, 30 years or 15
we'll
years
jump
would have transitioned into data centers,
you know?
And that's and hosting applications in a more expansive way, but we're not really seeing that kind of uptake. Maybe it comes down to cost again, I guess.
I guess it comes down to cost and demand for these services.
Yeah,
demand is a big deal, yeah.
So it's
an ecosystem.
Yeah, it is.
We
it
need
is.
To drive demand so these providers can...
Exactly.
Provide.
Yeah.
So you hear that developers, you need to develop more and host on our local services. as much as you can.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, to kind of wrap this up, we talked about a lot of things. And we talked about a lot of things.
I just tried Nimp One, and their site is down.
Down?
Yeah. Yep. It's, well, there's an error. The requested URL cannot be retrieved.
Well, we hope by the time Net One hears this, that
it'll be
fixed.
Up.
Yeah. Your website is down.
Yeah, 99% of the time. 99% of the time, right?
Yeah.
We're in that 1%.
So, wait, like, run this up. Sorry. I'm sorry, but if I'm going to trust you with my data to replicate and your website is down, like, what assurance is it that my data is safe? I guess it's just a website issue and not like the services themselves, because I think they should have a pretty good space there.
Well, yeah, I guess like in terms of the local space, they're up there, but like this is what we're talking about. Like this is an issue that people who go on like external sites, you know, I don't want to throw shade, but like things like this are part of the reason why people would rather be on an external site, because if you go on an external site,
you won't have issues.
Well,
but not as regularly. We're not talking about that one directly. Like, we don't know. So, just a disclaimer, just in case people come at us, you know.
Don't add me.
Yeah. So, guys, this has been episode 3 of CodeCast. We've been discussing the cloud infrastructure. What resources are available for developers for free, and what kind of stuff you could jump on. We've talked about local companies, albeit just two, that are getting into the cloud space.
Yeah.
And bringing the cloud closer to home, which is within the boundaries of our great mother nation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping to see more people that are going to come and do more than what's happening right now.
Yep.
Give developers space freely. That they can then jump on, because I know you can host stuff on the National Data Center, but I think that right now the process is a bit too long.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in a form or whatever, I don't know, but it's a bit too
complicated.
Long. Yeah, it needs to be streamlined and cloud. Oh
yeah.
Filling a form is a bit too crazy. Like,
I mean,
we're going into cloud space.
If it's filling a form on.
But it's not, I know that for sure. So, I hope by the time this goes out, that would have changed. But that's kind of stuff we want to see as developers and stuff. I know this episode has been a little bit more technical than all the other episodes we've had. And I hope our listeners can tweet us if they want to know anything else.
Yeah.
And we can speak about it online. So on Twitter, that's CodeCast, ZM. You can tweet CodeAgora as well.
Yeah.
You can tweet
at Mbuyu _.
At Mbuyu. And you can tweet Elias's handle though.
I can't even remember.
JOR_ELI360.
Cool.
Wow. At me.
and you can tweet at SourBones. That's Sour_Bones. And we can start the conversation about cloud services, and we can answer all your questions, and feel free to DM us or whatever. It's an open space.
Mm-hmm.
Any other last words, guys, before we sign off officially?
Yeah, since we're talking cloud services, so I work at BongaHive, and we have a partnership with Amazon. So if you have a business idea and you come to BongaHive, you have access to 2 years of free.
I should really charge you for advertising.
Come on, we're talking cloud services.
Let's go.
Yes. So you get to use Amazon Web Services for 2 years for free.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
That's
a really good deal.
And we encourage everybody to come through to BongaHive and take a look at cloud services in much more detail.
Mm-hmm.
This is really good for up and coming developers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
and I guess I should also mention that there'll be a Docker workshop soon that will kind of get into how to use software containers to deploy applications online that Agora Code Community will be hosting. So we'll furnish more details. It was supposed to be a couple of weeks ago, but we had to postpone. So we'll be sending out more information about that soon.
CodeAgora on Twitter.
Facebook, that's Agora Code Community, and our website is agoracode.community. And
Instagram, Code Agora.
I know you really want to be on radio with us. And if any radio DJs are listening, please give this guy a chance, man.
Don't add me.
All right, guys, it's been real. I was your host. Sorry, I'm still laughing at last. I was your host, Bukuma, and we'll see you on the next episode of Codecast.
Codecast out.
This episode of Codecast was brought to you by Agora Code Community. We're connecting developers one line of code at a time. Visit our website, it's agoracode.community. On Facebook, we're Agora Code Community. We're on Instagram at Code Agora, and we're on Twitter as well at the same handle, which is Code Agora. Tune in next time.